Hello, everyone. This is Frank Shines here with my brother.
Granison Shines.
How
How's
you
it going?
doing, Granison? How's everything? Merry Christmas.
All good, man. Merry Christmas to you too. It's been a wonderful Christmas holiday. Been relaxing, been chilling, been chillaxing, everything if you want to put into the equation there. It's been awesome though, but I
Awesome.
appreciate the end of the year. How about you over there?
Yeah, Santa was good to us the whole year, not just this weekend or this
Very cool.
Friday.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's been a good Christmas. So just the four of us, Dad and Rachel and our daughter and Mama Michelle. I guess I should add the fifth one, our dog.
Dog, huh?
So we're all good and safe. Just kind of, I did the cooking, did duck and some other things and berries and stuff this Christmas, and Dad did the desserts, and Rachel and Ace and Mama helped do all the eating. So,
Dad's always
good
good for
team.
the desserts. Dad's always good for the desserts.
Yeah. So our last recording before the New Year's. So. We are going to pick up where we left off. Predictions for 2021, part two, or do if you're French. And we're also going to, before we go into that, kind of touch on what's been happening in the news. So, got a few topics up here, but anything else you can think of? What have you been hearing out there in Arizona and with your friends around the world? I'll tell you what I've been hearing and seeing, and we'll talk through some of these other items as well. But I guess the big thing is for the first time ever, we broke through the 60,000 deaths for
No,
COVID in a month, and the month is not even over.
not even over yet, Frank.
Yeah,
Not
yeah.
even over. But and as you're talking about keeping small groups, there are some people that I know of that did not keep small groups. They have big family gatherings and friends and whatnot.
Oh, I hear you. I was telling Michelle, I looked out. On Christmas Eve down our street, and there's just cars backed up
Cars, yeah.
everywhere, up and down the street.
Absolutely, same here. And hearing the parties and hearing the voices, and you can tell that it's more than a party of six people because it's just crazy. But yeah, it's and like you said, Frank, the year is not over, but definitely predicting that since we have this past Christmas a couple days ago, and then we have the New Year's coming up, and people are going to be gathering again and more.
I know.
I don't know, that 63,000 mark may be surpassed when it comes to late January or early February, better yet.
Yeah, what is it, Anthony Fauci, the head of the coronavirus task force, he said it's a surge on a surge, right? He goes, this is the worst, and the worst is still yet to come, but we're imposing a surge on a surge, and it's really unfortunate. And on the one hand, I'll make these comments, but on the other hand, I'm not going to, dictate and suggest that, that we clamp down on people. That's not, the type of country we are. We have a whole history of, revolts, and that's part of who, what makes America, both the good and the bad associated with America, right? But yeah, I just hope more people will be a little bit more patient. Understanding that, help is on the way with this coronavirus vaccines that are being rolled out. If we can save a few more lives, that's all the better for all of us. But
Absolutely,
yeah,
absolutely.
we're not necessarily living up to generations of the past that had the patience, had the discipline and intestinal fortitude, like we saw in World War II and other generations, the great generations.
Yeah, well, let's see about that. I hopefully, like you said, people will be a bit more patient. But I think that since people know that the vaccine is pretty much here, that they're going to expose themselves a little bit more, just take the bull by the horns and just get out there, and hopefully they will think more people will be thinking about getting the vaccine and having that be part of their solution.
Yeah.
And well, unfortunate, but I think that may happen here.
Right.
So the youth, huh?
Yeah. So do you hear about these stories about the youth and Bloomberg report, special report? They talked about the generation interrupted. But I thought it was an interesting, initial data around this, but they're talking about, is it kind of a lost generation with the pandemic? Some of the figures that they highlighted were, this trend. If they went back and looked from March, April was a big peak when you saw this kind of the peak in unemployment across all ages. For the total workforce, you saw something in the neighborhood of an 8.4% unemployment trend, and then about a 16% unemployment trend, and it dropped, it's since come down to about 8.4 from that peak of April down to, August timeframe around 8.4. But yet, if you looked at what happened with the youth workforce, it peaked as high as 36%, and it's still double the rate of the 8.4 at 16% for that population. So yeah, I don't know what your experience is with your daughters around that age group, but it's definitely something me and Michelle, we've talked a lot about as we prepare Rachel. She's at that age now where she's start getting the recruiting college stuff because of gymnastics, and we already got her in advanced placement STEM classes and already teaching her some of the college related things just to have her ready to go. But yeah, when you look at these bigger trends, no one's safe.
Yeah, and that's the scary part about it. We used to have some sort of predictability. Hey, we go to college, we pretty much will get a job or have a job offer, depending on, of course, the major, all things being equal. But you had that comfort there because of your education that would transpire. And Frank, to see that this is not the case right now, because I know people who their kids are in college and they're moving back home and they don't have a job and they don't have even some of the offers, and they are filing so many resume applications and everything else, and it's just not happening at the moment for them. And these are ones with degrees that you would think would be in line for offers during this time, but it's not happening. So they're moving back home, as we see here, moving back home.
Right.
With the parents. Back to the room they used to have at the home, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, exactly. We talk about, this in the book, just that, when you see like the Gen Z, but you look at, for the second time right now in about 12 years, right? If you go back to 2008 with the late 2007, 2008, the Great Recession, as opposed to the Great Depression, but almost as bad as the Great Depression, with that financial crisis and all of that, that impacted so many youth. And now they're getting hit with a double whammy now, at, early part of their career. And the data suggests that, when you get hit this way at an early point in your career, you never make up, those dollars in the future. Those are some of the real troubling trends. The number of, families that are being created, houses that are being purchased, home ownership and purchase of vehicles, all those sorts of things that become part of, those key life change milestones. It's just not happening. It's happening at a much later rate. And as that occurs, there's a lot of concern. Because you also, in addition to getting hit this hard, you now have, other individuals who would have retired, whether it's baby boomers or even the next generation following them, Gen X's, that would have been looking to retire that are going to stay in the workforce longer, which is going to make it more difficult. Yep. Right. And then you've got the increasing challenges associated with globalization, which maybe brings us into this other story that we touched on. You know, China is now poised to overtake the U.S. as the number one economy in the world.
Exactly.
Than initially expected, right?
Yeah. Economists have been talking about this for a while, haven't they?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And which furthers, going back to the previous point, which furthers the wealth gap between the ultra wealthy and those who are not as wealthy. And it's just becoming, it's eroding the middle class even more so because of that. And we saw even, they did a report last week. I was listening to NPR. They were talking about homes that were purchased versus, and these are, there were more luxury homes purchased by the rich who got, who increased their wealth during this time, and less homes purchased for those average Americans. So you see that gap, even in the real estate market. You see it in other nuances as well in terms of business. You see it all, it's going to be affecting all over. It's going to just have that trickle down effect or domino effect into other industries.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. No, you're exactly right. In that report, you know, that I was looking at around the impact of China and how it's, you know, directly affecting our middle class erosion, mm-hmm. for reasons, you know, we'll get into more here a little bit later around healthcare and education and these types of things in terms of our predictions for 2021. But yeah, the Center for Economics and Business Research, they now expect that, you know, when you look at the value of the Chinese economy relative to the U.S. economy, you know, measured in U.S. dollars, it's expected to exceed that of the U.S. Right before the prediction was 2033-2034 timeframe, and now it's half a decade faster than that, right? 2028. Wow. So I mean, here we are at 2021. So we're like within 7 years, within the next 7 years, and who knows, it could be even sooner. The U.S. will be the second largest economy. We will no longer be number one economy.
No, exactly. No longer the powerhouse that we were in terms of economic reasons. So, yes. Wow.
So in the news around Trump, so he left D.C., went to Florida, but left a few things undone. Do you hear about the news there?
Yes. And that being said, we have millions and millions of Americans who need the relief. And of course, they were talking about, oh, well, now they got to send the bill down to Florida because that's where he is, left the D.C. economy and went to with Mar-a-Lago and hanging out there. And my goodness, man, to have him just leave it undone is a travesty in my book.
Yeah.
What anybody says there.
Yeah. The other part of that is the defense bill. And you know, that puts the military in a position where, we basically put our military at risk and a lot of the DOD around the support of the military and as well. So he vetoed a defense bill this past week. So that's also got people concerned. Just looking at the numbers, I guess Congress has the votes to be able to override it, apparently. But obviously, it's just one of those other items around the economy, around politics that's happening amidst a pandemic that, you know, we shouldn't have to suffer even more through. So yeah, a lot of concerns from both sides, the Republicans and the Democrats, around some of those things that they had hoped to be able to roll out, the relief package and, you know, pass the defense bill and other things, kind of close out the year on an uptick. And unfortunately, it's a lot of millions of Americans now are going to be at risk.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. That's unfortunate. And that just goes to show that, you know, as a leader, you should have a one of the priorities should be the people that you are leading or supposed to be leading, right? And avert your responsibilities, and that seems to me is just not displaying high quality leadership qualities there at all. So,
right. So another big issue in the news: West Point caught in a cheating scandal, worse in 40 years. So, not good. As a graduate of Air Force Academy, you know, who's at the very top of our, you know, top of our value system.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was on the right. It was everywhere you go, you'd see it. We will not lie, steal, or cheat, nor tolerate among us anyone who does. That dates all the way back to, you know, President Thomas Jefferson back in 1802, you know, when the U.S. Military Academy or West Point was founded. Obviously, the Air Force was spun out of the Army, so the Academy came along later in 1947 when MacArthur kind of formalized the honor code for all the service academies and crafted the new words that, you know, I just kind of spoke to. The West Point's words are almost exactly the same. I think some of the words are slightly moved around, but they basically say the same thing: we will not lie, steal, or cheat, nor tolerate among us anyone who does. And
military, how do you feel on the concessions they're making for 55?
Yeah, so when I was at the academy, if you were caught cheating
here,
type of a thing, you would immediately be dismissed from the academy, hands down. Just all the service academies had that rule. In 2015, a new rule was passed to kind of acknowledge the fact that, well, I guess to acknowledge the fact that no one's perfect, maybe, and you know what we should try to do is, rather than eliminate everyone from the academy, if individuals are willing to come out and confess, you know, that they've not lived up to the standard, then there is an option for them to go before the board and therefore not necessarily be dismissed outright. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know all the intricacies of that new rule, but my understanding is there's 55 of roughly maybe as many as 70 or 73 cadets who have come out immediately. I think there are a handful of others who left on their own, and others who are kind of in a holding pattern or whatever, but 55 of them came out and honestly confessed that, you know, as part of this, I guess it was a calculus exam.
Mm-hmm.
It's a trend that they are seeing across a lot of other colleges and universities. This does not excuse the behavior, right. But in COVID with virtual environment, it's become easier to cheat, and perhaps because you don't have, maybe you feel more pressure because you're not in a class where you can have the same type of interaction with, you know, with your professors and with other classmates to learn things. Maybe that's been part of it as well. But it is something they're seeing it run across the U.S. I haven't looked to see what's happening, you know, kind of globally, but definitely in the U.S. it's a trend that a number of universities have also cited.
The ease of the cheating because of the remote learning opportunity, and they can get online and get some answers, even though they're, you know, from an honor position speaking,
right,
just do the test. But of course, well, let me go online and see what I can find out real quick regarding this answer, right? That kind of mentality.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So I'll just tell you, just straight up, at all the service academies, you know, we have these online forums and things, Zoomy News is what we call it. We have what's known as the AOG, the Association of Graduates, for all the different service academies. And there's a lot of chatter out there, on, you know, mostly pretty negative from the previous classes about this cheating scandal and the fact that, you know, 55, you know, of these folks are, you know, may be allowed to stay at the service academy at West Point in this particular case. So not lost on a lot of the Service Academy grads who, you know, we all agreed that, you know, this was one of the most important, one of the most important items. And I'll just give you a little history on this because, given what's going on around coronavirus, I think it's particularly important. And I was watching The Crown on Netflix with Michelle last night. And so, you know, for the first time, she was kind of learning a lot more about the whole history of the military and, you know, the U.S. Through my eyes, because, you know, she's originally born, you know, in Jamaica.
Right.
So they're showing the a number of different things that were related to the military. One was around an incident in some false information and things out of the UK associated with the Duke of Windsor and the Nazis. And there's a whole issue around that. But then there was also an incident around the military and LBJ and the Vietnam War. And at the Air Force Academy, our professors who were, you know, World War I, Korean War, and World War II, and Vietnam War veterans, they told us, they made it very clear, don't put yourself in a position in terms of your ethics that allows you to be compromised, right? Whether that's in war and behind enemy lines as a prisoner of war, which is why I have so much respect for John McCain and the fact right. that he stayed there and spoke, spoke the truth and was not, was tortured because he would not, you know, use words degrading the U.S., United States of America, you know, regarding the war. And, you know, a number of different individuals that were at the Academy who were in similar situations in terms of prisoners of war or knew many of the prisoners of war in different wars and said, you know, you've got to stand up to what's truth. There's an old saying that if I can't go back with my self-respect, I won't go back at all. That's a very famous phrase from one of the prisoner of war candidates. That ethics extended to the body bag count fiasco that the military faced under LBJ and partially, you know, in the Nixon era. And so the big point that they preached to us was, don't let yourself even be compromised by a president. You cannot obey an unlawful order, even if it comes from your chief, your commander in chief, the president of the United States, right? And I think that's important because of what we saw at Lafayette Square and how the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff stood up and said, this is not what the military does, right? We do not get involved in domestic politics. We're not going to be used as a political instrument, you know, against our own citizens. And so I think that was a really important stance to take, but this is where this whole discussion now around West Point in the current climate around disinformation, misinformation, and where do your loyalties lie? Your loyalties as a military officer always lie with the U.S. Constitution, not with a president, not with any single individual, not with, you know, your own preference or ego. It's always with supporting and defending the Constitution of the U.S. and its people, right? That's the oath you take. And so they drilled that into us and said, be careful because, you know, over the coming years, you will be faced with a challenge like this throughout your career, challenges like this throughout your career. And you may be in a position where, right, you may have to say, speak truth to power, even at the highest level of government. So that's why this is receiving a lot of attention because of many of the folks who went through the service academies were taught by Colonel Wakin. He was the guy who wrote the whole book on ethics and so forth, and everybody knows about him in the service academies. But a lot of great lessons learned there. And so what's happened is this whole cheating scandal has taken on a whole life of its own in terms of the current application of extending the honor code well beyond just the four walls of West Point into your career as a military officer.
Right.
And by extension, why don't we have more of these types of things with other leaders? And I would say, why don't we have these things in Silicon Valley, right? Just like a military person has to be trained to use weapons and technology for weapons, we're also taught ethics, right? Every week we have ethics classes, but yet an engineer who can impact billions of people with disinformation, misinformation, bring down a democracy, destroy lives, kill, you know, have impacts that can kill people and destroy countries and companies, but yet they're not required to live up to an ethical standard or code. So
very true.
I think a lot of these discussions are now coming out because of this West Point cheating scandal. So
yeah, those discussions need to be had, that's for sure. Yeah, absolutely. And that should go across the board. From my perspective, that should go across the board with many different industries as well, and or job opportunities. And I mean, this is just one of those things that we should continue to keep in front of our eyes so that we're not affected or and or tempted to do anything otherwise. I think it's just something that just should continue to be done.
Yeah, I think we're going to find, you know, when you look at coronavirus, and if you can imagine the truth having been more forcefully communicated and defended, how many more lives could have been saved, right? As an example, right? So I think it has real world implications. And as we look forward to talking about, you know, some of these 2021 trends, I think this is going to be an important part of, you know, how do you start to think about combating disinformation, making it possible for us to, you know, reform our democracy to survive in this new, you know, era of artificial intelligence and genetic engineering and, you know, quantum computing and everything else that's happening. So,
sure. That's something that our leadership will definitely have to address in the very, very near future. And or like we wrote about it in the book as well, how to utilize and institute a process of leadership across many different industries and the mindsets of leaders and future leaders and the leaders that are already here also, but not just future leaders, the ones that are already here, the ones who have authority, making decision-making power right now and utilizing that. So we write about it in the book, don't we?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. The 2021 prediction, shifting gears. So one is around our immigration policy. So what have you been hearing? What are your predictions about what is likely to change with the new Biden administration? You know, and maybe picking up a bit, you know, why is this even important?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And that kind of segues into point number two as well, because the way I was thinking about it, the way I heard about it, another gentleman was talking about it, his name eludes me, but definitely the H-1B status because of the new Biden administration coming in, that has been some discussions as far as the opportunity for foreign talent to come over based on visa that we have here, and it's kind of been our secret weapon into our boost in innovation in our economy. We have many different ethnicities coming over, different countries, and they have contributed tremendously to our technology and that's something that we're going to have to continue to have part of as our secret weapon in order to continue innovation there. So that immigration policy, is it going to be affected? I think it's going to be affected, but hopefully it stays to the point where we continue to have these different ethnicities come into the play as well. So we need that. I think we need that.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, some of the trends, the predictions we kind of touch on here. Now, I'm going to just kind of maybe highlight, you know, the top five that we're kind of talking through, because I think there's a lot of overlap, as you were just noticing, around immigration versus the education system, right? So one is, okay, the H-1B and the immigration policy changes and things moving forward, you know, what can be best for America and Americans. Our education system reform, healthcare changes, post-COVID, the U.S. versus China, given, you know, the global economy and the influences, soft power and so forth that the different nations have, political hard power like your military, as well as the soft power of your culture and those sorts of things, and your immigration policy, right? And then, you know, kind of what, you know, are some of the best jobs of the future. As we explore those five predictions for 2021, yeah, here's a perfect example where there's so much overlap. And I'll go back to, you know, just lessons learned from, you know, history and a lot of what we talked about even at the Air Force Academy. I remember one of the first projects I worked on, we're trying to address the issues associated with information technology workers that supplied a lot of the software and hardware and programming, coding and so forth to help support the military. And the inability for the military to pay the types of wages to attract and retain that type of talent. And so we found ourselves increasingly dependent upon not only civilians, but universities where there were foreign students or foreign universities themselves for different types of technology that are necessary to run a lot of different avionic and technology and military military armaments and equipment and avionic and communication systems and satellites and so forth. And so it's always been a real, you know, big concern. But on the other hand, if you think about, you know, how the military has handled this in the past, right? We would not have won World War II without our immigration policy being able to attract the greatest minds around physics and the development of the atomic bomb as part of Manhattan Project, right? Yeah. And so we have a rich history of being able to make, you know, this country available and accessible and attractive to some of the greatest minds in the world. We cultivate that with whether military or civilian, we bring in that type of different viewpoint, mindset, and talent that gives us a different perspective that also keeps all of us kind of hungry and pushing hard into the future and having this kind of, you know, competitive spirit, knowing that, you know, we can't just sit on our laurels because we're always bringing in great ideas from all over the world.
Exactly.
So yeah, I think this is really important as we think of the U.S. versus China. I think that's going to be one of our great superpowers. It's always been a great superpower of the U.S. I don't think China can outcompete us because of those reasons. There's so many Chinese, and in fact, I don't know if you heard about that recent incident going on between Alibaba. Jack Ma, the CEO of Alibaba, came out, made some comments, disparaging comments following the crackdown of the Chinese government on his financial institution called Ant Finance. And now the government has come back and is now investigating, putting the whole Alibaba company, the larger company, under investigation now. Alibaba, for those of you who aren't familiar, is like the only, you know, global competitor to Amazon. They are huge.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we're already seeing the impact of this, you know, this interplay between the China global economy versus the U.S. Who's going to win that war?
Right.
Immigration policies that we erect, particularly if we don't, in our education system during this coronavirus period, we've lost a lot of revenue associated with foreign students coming into the universities because we were restricted, right? Well, in some cases they can't come here because our coronavirus cases are too high or infection rates are too high. And for other reasons, you know, the government has cracked down on foreign students, and those students often stay behind and serve as the, you know, kind of the feedstock for the growth of our high-tech economies and industry and companies and upstarts in Silicon Valley and other places around the country.
Huh. Wow. Changes, man. It's the only thing that's constant.
Yeah, exactly. So spilling across that into the impact on jobs and what do we see in healthcare, right? So I guess from the perspective of the specific job impact,
So what we're seeing over here, of course, is, and this has been in the news too, the healthcare changes. It's twofold. One, it's the workers, and then we also see that the people who are affected by the coronavirus and their health going forward. So from the worker standpoint, it has been, I was talking to a lady here who's an RN, and she's just saying that it's just, they're so overworked, right? I mean, they've been talking about that for a while. They're so overworked. And then on the other side with the population here, it's just been one thing after another. There's been so many different other types of nuances that have come after the fact, after even some of the people that have been healed and, or I should say healed, I mean, they've recovered. And right. There's still some remnants of not only the virus and or some of the other conditions afterwards. I forgot what they were calling some of the symptoms, but then it's also affecting some of the nuances that are not covered by healthcare and whatnot. I mean, it's just been all over the board. I think something needs to definitely happen. Some reform needs to happen in healthcare after post-COVID.
I really do think that Biden and his administration are going to put a lot of emphasis in this area. We have not erected a floor around, you know, kind of a safety net through which, you know, people won't fall, so that we could maintain a certain level of our middle class, all right? Because a big part of what is happening is, you know, look at some of those numbers around bankruptcies, and what is number one reason for a lot of bankruptcies are associated with, you know, some sort of healthcare event that drives people into financial distress. We look at coronavirus, where the government, you know, forcibly, demands that companies and people cannot make money, cannot generate income, but yet we don't put in place the proper type of healthcare coverage for those individuals. I think that's going to be a real big issue as we look at some of the impact of the trends that we talk about in the book, right? Where coronavirus, when it comes, and any pandemics in the past or any big crisis in the past, whether it was 9/11 or previous pandemics, it drove us to make drastic changes and accelerate changes that were already in place. And so what I predict is that we will see these healthcare changes. They will come and they will be accelerated and have a long-term, I think, positive impact on the country. From the perspective of a healthcare system and better coverage. So I think that is one thing that's going to happen. It's going to be a knockdown, drag out fight. But I think when you just look at the demographics, right, and they say demographics is destiny. But when you look around the demographics with the aging populations, those people vote. And when they vote, they have an impact. And more of them are retired or retiring. And therefore, I think they are going to demand that we have a better kind of a floor with respect to some sort of safety net for people as it relates to healthcare. I think the other thing we're gonna see is a dramatic decrease in healthcare costs. I think individuals have come up with behavior changes that they've learned from the coronavirus. You know, we kind of briefly talked about before that the new normal will not be just normal. If we're not going back to normal, it's gonna be new, whatever it is. And I think one part of that is that people are going to have recognized if you are healthy and you take care of yourself, you have a better chance of surviving coronavirus, right? The COVID. And consequently, therefore, your healthcare costs and everything are going to be less. So you have agency, you have control over your own fitness and your health. So I think you'll see some trends there. We're already seeing a lot of things that where people are using apps and working from home in a more flexible way that lets them get up and move around. I think you're also going to see where the healthcare costs are going to come down because more and more of the medical profession is moving to telemedicine. So I think that's going to be a big change that we'll see moving forward. That's going to reduce healthcare costs, put, you know, kind of health back into the hands of the people to, you know, be responsible more for themselves. I think you're also going to see the fact that you've got big data and analysis and information that allows an insurance company to incentivize or provide consequences for people who don't take better care of themselves. And I think those types of forces will also impact us long term, you know, in a positive way.
Well, that's good, because healthcare reform is, in my book, way past due. We know that the costs for said premiums have been very much so unstable, to say the least, and we're definitely ready for that, definitely.
Yeah, I mean that is one, you know, I mean, here's a perfect point. You know, we're talking about the China, you know, kind of global competitiveness, right? So yeah, if we've got healthcare costs that are growing at a higher rate than other nations, and we spend more on healthcare than other nations as a, you know, per capita, that directly impacts every single job, right? Because those individuals who might be getting a raise, that money will not go to a raise and to their salary because it's paying for their healthcare. And those employers know, right, that they have to account for 10, 20, 12, 30% more, you know, whatever time period to cover their healthcare costs associated with their employees. And consequently, those wages aren't going to get passed on, which means that you're not going to always be able to attract the top talent, and drive the types of incentives with individuals around productivity and innovation. And consequently, it does not make you as competitive. Not only that, that means you've got to build into every single product or service you create this additional premium associated with covering healthcare labor, because we haven't brought our system in alignment with kind of a global standard around per capita cost of health, right? And so that puts us at a competitive disadvantage. So I think, again, there's a perfect example where we see, you know, some of these trends and predictions overlapping and having cross impact. So,
right.
Best jobs of the future. When I think about some of the best jobs, first things that come to mind is individuals. It's not just the skill you learn, but it's the ability to become resilient. We call it cycle flex, you know, in the book, you know, where, you know, kind of we let in a lot of stress, but we haven't brought in cycle flex, meaning psychological flexibility, because the future is happening so fast. It's so rapid. You can't predict what it's going to be. So you've got to be just resilient to change and ability to adapt. So that's one important thing that, you know, kind of a behavioral skill set, if you will, that's going to be a part of the future. Obviously, artificial intelligence, you know, part of the title of the book, right? AI, all the genetics and biologics types of skills are going to be jobs of the future. The ability to learn and problem solve much faster in a jobs around innovation, where you don't just, you know, say grab raw data, but you take the data and you think of creative ways to simplify the communication of the information to persuade and convince people, particularly in an era where we've had, you know, a lot of misinformation and disinformation and fake news, right? I think that's going to be a big challenge for companies moving forward. How do they protect your brand around fake news? How do they protect your industries? How do they protect your country around fake news?
Sure.
So, cyber, right? With the big break, the cyber attack that we have, I think the cybersecurity types of jobs, obviously the technology and computer science types of jobs are going to be jobs of the future. But I also think there's, you know, there's going to be this whole new job approach where you bring in the creative, innovative side of yourself as a human being and your ability to move physically in the world, which an AI and a robot can't do as well as people. And you combine it by augmenting your skills with that artificial intelligence algorithm or with a robot, right? So examples of this are like, if you think of what's happening, say in the cockpit and in the operating room, surgeons that literally do brain surgery and do other surgeries by using their hand, but they're aided by high-tech goggles and glasses that allow them to see better, you know, at high resolution magnification. They're working through, you know, the equivalent of joysticks as they do surgery. They've got foot pedals to help navigate as they move instruments and things through the body as they're performing their surgery. Very similar to what a pilot does, right? So on the one hand, you know, we have autopilot, which is assisted pilot controls throughout the cockpit, but you never turn over the entire control of the stick and of the cockpit to a computer, right? There's always a human in the loop. Right. I think human in the loop types of innovations and technology skills are going to be a big part of the types of jobs of the future that we're going to see.
Well said. Well said there. I agree 100%. Not much I need to add there. He articulated that very, very well. So I'm following your thought process on that one for sure. And like you said, I think you said this, but you alluded to it, but mm-hmm. also that opportunity of being able to really simplify complex notions and thought processes that come about throughout the jobs, the job opportunities. So that's definitely something that you need to learn how to do.
Or future. Right, yeah, I think one of the chief reasons, you know, I was talking with you know, this friend of mine, we were talking about who's in the White House working, you know, one person removed from the president. We had some conversations over the last few months. You know, and he's got a couple of kids that are, you know, one recently graduated from Georgetown and another who's been in the job market for a while. But looking at, you know, the challenges that they have, and he was explaining to me that, you know, his daughter, who's now working for a consulting firm, you know, similar to a big IBM consulting or Ernst & Young or Deloitte & Touche type consulting firm, and the things that she's learning already around just how complex things are, technology and healthcare and genetics and robotics and all these sorts of things. And then her brother, his son, who is in the area of graphic design and communication. And he goes, you know, initially when he got into this industry, I was just kind of really concerned. And he brought this up to me during our last Air Force Academy reunion. And, you know, I had written that first book and he was saying, hey, I got to, you know, can you give me an extra copy of this book? I could give it to my son because I'm not sure he understands the new changes in technology and things that are happening around the world. He wants to do this graphic stuff. He goes, but what he's seeing now is that what his son is doing is taking very complex information around issues that most people don't understand and simplifying it through video, animation, and other graphics to make a message more accessible and understandable for average people. And I think that's a big area where we miss. We talked about this around coronavirus. And I said, you know, one of the things I've been surprised that the administration, you know, has not done there in the White House is soon as this virus hit, why did we not go out to some of the top Hollywood producers and artists, you know, in New York and other places around our country, bring them together and through combination of Hollywood animations and sci-fi, right? And music things simplify the message, right? How right. do you show someone how a virus spreads? How do you explain to someone what a virus is, right? None of that's ever been done. It's never been simplified in a way that someone can look at, like, you know, a 2-minute or 3-minute public service announcement and get it, right? And I think that's really been a great disservice, you know. And he said, he told me, he brought this up in a meeting internally at the White House, right? And he said, soon as Tom Hanks got coronavirus, we should have jumped all over that and used him as a key spokesperson. And we didn't do it.
Yeah, very much so. Yep. Because he was one of the first celebrities to really contract that, right, that we know of.
Exactly.
And in the mainstream news. And that's correct. That would have been the perfect opportunity to capitalize on that and spreading the word. Very much, very well said. Yep.
So, yeah, I agree with your point around, you know, yeah, how do we take the world is just going to just get increasingly complex. It's going to be moving a lot faster. is going to be a lot more difficult for people to understand. One of the things that we're doing with the book, so you guys keep an eye out for it. We're working with one of my cousins, who's a graphic artist, to make a graphic version of the book for the same types of reasons. Not everyone wants to read through, you know, 250, 300 page book around artificial intelligence and technology and business ideas and so forth. So what we've really done is start to look at a way that we can create a simple graphical version to kind of accompany the book. It's not going to be a replacement for the book, but it's going to be a way that if someone wanted to understand the essence of it and look at that in graphical format, then this is a way it can be done. So with that, let's just kind of highlight. So around predictions, we're expecting immigration policy is going to change. We believe it's going to become stronger. We're going to reestablish our ability to bring in the top talent around the world and leverage that in 2021. And that's going to have a very positive impact on not only our education system, but our job market. Those numbers, somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 to 60% of new tech startups that create jobs have at least one founder that's from, you know, first generation from another country. Education system reform. We live in a world where, you know, there's so much cost for, you know, these early Gen Z, Gen Y, earlier generations that are carrying all of this debt associated with trying to go to a typical college university. I think we're going to see a big change. I'm going to guess that somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 20% of individuals who would normally go through a typical college environment are not going to go through that. They're going to be taking advantage of these more Google, IBM, and other high-tech sponsored technology certifications, right. Sort of like micro, you know, kind of micro degrees and things of that sort. I think you're going to see a big change there. I think you're going to see a certain percentage, both K through 12 and college, which will convert to hybrid as well as full online types of education options for people. We're looking at that very closely now with my, with our daughter, Rachel. She's just 11 years old, but we're already seeing certain things that probably make it better for her to be in that type of environment versus a typical K through 12 classroom.
Right.
And then I think you're going to see, just a whole new ways that people are going to come to the table with ideas, you know, similar to like a master class that's, you know, that's now being, you know, pushed a lot. You'll see it on YouTube and other places where experts in their fields come up with online virtual training tools that are very affordable and inexpensive. And rather than having, you know, to go through a university or professor and sit through hours and hours and months of training in school, you go directly to the expert in your field and you learn it from them online. So I think you're going to see those types of changes. And then the top, you know, say the service academies, the Ivy League schools, I think they're going to become even more powerful. And the smart ones are going to start rolling out virtual classes. The Air Force Academy has already started to do this. And I've listened in on a lot of these. But I think there's a whole other, you know, second, third tier types of colleges that probably are not going to survive. Gut feel.
Yeah. I think there's going to be some definite reform there. It's well said.
Right. Healthcare topics we talked about, you know, were around, you know, how will technology change and bring down the cost of healthcare and put it more in the hands of the individual to take more control over their own lives. Then the China versus the U.S. in terms of AI wars and quantum computing, all the artificial intelligence and big data and analytics, that's going to be a big, big impact moving forward. And we're already beginning to see that. But I do believe that, you know, our great advantage will be around our soft power, our culture, our openness in terms of our economy. But we are going to have to put in place some stronger discipline around certain things, particularly when we have very high risk things such as a pandemic or whatever other type of crisis that comes in the future. How do we tighten up controls a little bit more and manage the discipline around certain things using good, you know, communication and data and information and, you know, some of the, you know, comments we talked about before around, you know, artists and and actors and celebrities that can help communicate that message in a way that people can understand it. And then, of course, we talked about all the future of jobs. A lot of those are going to be around resilience and technology, but also around innovation and creativity, and combining that with artificial intelligence and human in the loop or human augmented tools that can support you, just the way, you know, your Mac computer helps you create animation and do drawings and innovation and technology and do music better. And your cell phone, you know, your iPhone, your Samsung phone, how it augments you and helps you learn, find information, become more productive, come up with ideas, learn from others, all those sorts of things. We believe that's going to be kind of a big part of the jobs of the future, individuals who know how to use their innovation and skills, but also take advantage of the technology to augment their skills in ways that others don't. Creativity and problem solving and communication of that in a way that you can influence people within your industry, within your company to take action, make improvements, and outperform your competitors. We think those are the types of things that you're going to see as jobs of the future. Obviously, cybersecurity is going to be a big, big issue. And so we expect that, as well as geneticists, because you've got the CRISPR new technology, you've got genetic engineering, you've got the capability to now grow versus beating up products with steel and heat and force. More and more, you're going into a lab now and you're growing products in a lab, much like the conversations we had last week around, you know, the Impossible Burgers that are now being made in a Petri dish, so to speak, as opposed to out in a cow pasture. So those are some of the predictions for 2021 to kind of round out this year. Any last comments before we close for 2020?
Been an interesting year. So looking forward to 2021, opportunities avail. I think the opportunities are going to even be more so. And I think this is apropos for everyone, speaking to everyone here, find and look for those opportunities. I believe they are out there. And I believe we just have to be a bit more, we have to think different. That's my mantra coming going into 2021. Think different and grow from there.
Yeah, I like that. Good summary. Well, listen, everyone, it's been a joy speaking with you all. It's been a pleasure working with Grandison over the, you know, during the pandemic shutdown period. We just kind of worked around the clock, got this book revamped for the coronavirus age, got it out in the people's hands. So thank all of you for all of your support in 2020. Wish you a much better year in 2021. This is Frank Shines and Grandison Shines, authors of Let In But Let Out, Left Out, Leadership, Faith, and Knowledge in the Age of AI, Coronavirus, and Fake News. Happy New Year and Merry Christmas.